Hey, Mike here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to Dark Poutine early and ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime. You're about to listen to a historical episode of Dark Poutine. After episode 149, you will find Scott is no longer with the show. In an effort to maintain continuity and offer listeners as many episodes as possible, we are leaving the episodes in which he co-hosted intact. Thank you. Oh, listen to those loons, Scott. Aren't they the most amazing thing?
Cuckoo! Cuckoo!
They don't make that sound. Sure.
Yeah.
Quacky loons.
I know my fowls.
Yep.
I did get to spend some time with the local peahen peacock.
Oh, did you?
Yep. Yeah, he was kicking about today.
There you go.
Yeah. Charming fellow. Girl. It.
Girl. Sure. Welcome to Dark Poutine. I'm Mike Brown, creator and host. With me, as usual, is my good friend, co-host, and lover of peahens, Scott Hemenway.
Hey, everybody. What's not to love about them?
They are very henny.
That's a bad thing?
I don't know.
No, I say not.
Dark Poutine is not for the faint of heart or squeamish, especially this episode, as our content contains mature themes, well, and immature themes, harsh language, and graphic descriptions of violent crimes. Listener discretion is strongly advised. We're not experts on any of the topics we present, nor are we professional journalists. We're just two regular Canadians interested in crime and the darker side of history. And the darker side of other things.
The moon.
Yeah, well, all right.
Exactly.
Let's get to it. Put on your toque, grab yourself a double-double, and a Nanaimo bar. It's time to scarf down some dark poutine.
Thanks to Ariel for her share about the origins of Nanaimo Bar in the Yumberyard.
Oh, yes. Yes, she was sharing about the how-tos.
Correct.
Fantastic.
Powerful.
This is episode 35, and we want to start out by thanking our regular subscribers and welcome our new listeners. Hello, and thank you.
Hey, this is not a two-parter, so you can, if you're starting on this one, you can actually listen through it.
You can listen all the way through.
That's right.
We appreciate that you're filling your ears with our dark poutine, and perhaps, I don't know, another orifice or two.
Mike.
Well, your mouth. And your nose, because poutine smells very nice.
Sure, but you don't fill your nose with poutine.
You fill it with the smell.
Okay, no, you got me there. Sure.
Okay, there you go. After dealing with Andre Chikatilo for 2 weeks, oh boy.
Yeah.
One of Scott's favorite people.
He's a charming fellow.
Charming gentleman.
Yeah.
We thought our return to true crime in Canada should be a palate cleanser of sorts.
Very much so.
That Chikatilo guy was kind of a legitimate monster. I'm a little done with him.
He is the definition of monster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why I started with him as our away game.
Yeah.
Also the fact that the World Cup is being played in Russia right now.
Although, well done.
And I just watched a game the other day in Rostov-on-Don where he had committed a lot of his crimes.
Oh, wow. I had no idea the World Cup was happening in Russia.
Scott is not a footy fan.
No. I could go on to make jokes about it, but I won't because people like it. But I'm just not one of those people.
There you go. So we wanted to take on some lighter fare this time. This case is not a murder, it's not a kidnapping, or a disappearance. It's the story of a Canadian heist that's kind of a bummer.
Yes. Yes.
Like a real bummer.
Totes bummer. Real kick in the rear, this case.
On February 6th, 2015, a man named Leston Lawrence walked into the Royal Bank of Canada's branch in the Westgate Mall in Ottawa, Ontario. He chatted with Melina Lunn, a teller. He asked Melina to cash two checks made out to him from Ottawa gold buyers. And this is a business in the same mall. Oh. Ottawa Gold Buyers purchases gold jewelry, coins, and bullion from people looking to make a buck from precious metal they have on hand.
Absolutely. I've never hawked gold, but I do know of these stores.
Carol has hawked some of her gold that she received when she was in Saudi Arabia, and we got a pretty penny for it.
Sweet.
It all went to paying down credit at the time. So it was kind of a drag.
But beneficial.
Yeah. Leston didn't have an account at the branch that he went into. His branch was in Nepean, a suburb nearby. Being a Royal Bank customer, Melina was happy to help.
Very awesome of her.
Yeah, thank you, Melina.
Great customer service.
These checks were much larger than the usual $200 or $300 checks that the bank usually saw from Ottawa Gold Buyers. One was for $7,992.27. And the other was for $7,269.63.
That's a good chunk of change. I could buy some more cameras and lenses with that.
You absolutely could. Leston told the teller he wanted to send the entire amount via wire transfer to a contracting company in Jamaica called MJC Master Builders Limited. To expedite the transfer, Leston handed Melina a receipt he had for another wire transfer. All the information Melina would need was right there.
Okay. All right.
The receipt, however, was from just 2 days prior for exactly the same amount.
Okay, that's getting interesting here. Must be exchanging a lot of gold.
Yeah, that's $30,000 worth of gold.
In a few days. Yeah, I'm assuming that's just not a necklace and earrings.
No. Melina asked Lawrence what he'd sold at Ottawa Gold Buyers.
There we go.
Of course, she's going to ask that. Just curious, right?
Well, absolutely. Doing her due diligence in her role as well.
Yeah. He said gold nuggets. But as soon as he said the words, he started to look nervous.
Uh-oh. I guess maybe he's a panhandler, Mike?
Melina continued processing the transactions, but kept an eye on her customer, who was looking more and more agitated by the moment.
Yeah, nothing makes a situation more suspicious than somebody kind of being antsy.
Antsy, lots of money. Yeah. And antsiness do not go hand in hand in a bank.
Typically not. It's typically, Nick, you're showing, I don't usually do this. I'm not used to money.
Yeah. Melina asked why Leston wanted to transfer the same amount only 2 days later. She thought perhaps the earlier one had failed.
That's a safe assumption. This is good. I like Melina.
Yeah. Leston said no, it had gone through. He then said the money was for helping his parents to rebuild their house in Jamaica.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. That's a good explanation.
Nice guy.
Yeah. Panhandling in the mountains for gold and then sending the...
Sure.
The benefits
$30,000.
To the family.
Yeah.
In Jamaica. That's...
Yeah.
Very, very kind.
In the gold hills of Ottawa.
Yeah. Exactly. It's rich veins of gold up there.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure maybe some of the older senators' teeth in the upper house might have gold in their fillings.
Come on, Mount Ottawa.
Right.
It's very famous for its gold.
Parliament Hill. Sure. Have you ever been to Ottawa?
No.
No, been
to Calgary, Winnipeg, Edmonton, and Vegas, and New Jersey.
I will be able to say I will have been in Ottawa very soon. As the wire transfer was for an amount that Melina was not authorized for, she needed a supervisor's help.
You got protocols.
Yep. Leston Lawrence looked frustrated, and he was in a hurry to leave. Melina's supervisor helped her with the transfer. She handed the receipt for the wire transfer to Leston Lawrence, and he left the branch quickly.
Oh.
So there you go. He's gone. Something strange that Melina Lunn had noticed while she was dealing with Leston Lawrence's account that day. According to his records, he worked for the Royal Canadian Mint.
Oh, plot twist.
Yeah. The Royal Canadian Mint is a crown corporation responsible for the minting of Canadian coins, the change in your pocket, loonies, toonies, quarters, dimes, and nickels.
Mm-hmm.
And they also make coins for other countries and fancy collector coins and things like that.
Oh, okay. I didn't know they made coins for other countries.
That's interesting. Yeah. Like, I believe Bermuda and places like that.
Of course.
From Wikipedia, the Mint produces all Canada's circulation coins and manufactures circulation coins on behalf of other nations. The Mint also designs and manufactures precious and base metal collector coins, gold, silver, palladium, and platinum bullion coins, medals, as well as medallions and tokens. It further offers gold and silver for refinery and assay services.
So, I do not know what assay is.
Well, they assay your precious metals to determine what purity they are and what they're worth.
Okay. Well, just a coincidence that he works there.
Having a mint employee moving so much cash connected to private gold sales was definitely a red flag not lost on Melina Lunn and her supervisor. The RCMP were contacted that afternoon and told about Leston Lawrence and his multiple transactions and his odd behavior at the bank. RCMP began surveillance of Leston Lawrence right away.
Wow, they're not messing around with gold, are they?
Well, it is the Canadian Mint after all.
Yeah.
On March 9th, 2015, RCMP undercover operatives saw Leston Lawrence going into Ottawa Gold Buyers' offices in the Westgate Mall. He left 10 to 15 minutes later. RCMP entered the business a short time later and identified themselves. Hi. I think the conversation probably went, hello, a gentleman was just in here. What did he do?
Yep.
Leston had just sold a 24-carat gold puck for $7,966.27. Police seized the puck, along with a copy of the invoice for the transaction that had just taken place between Ottawa Gold Buyers and Leston Lawrence. This indicated Leston Lawrence had sold a gold nugget weighing 219.72 grams. That's about 7.5 ounces of nearly pure gold. And he got, for that, $7,586.93. And they even threw in a 5% customer satisfaction bonus.
Okay.
He was a good customer, after all. He'd been bringing them gold for quite some time.
Oh, okay. Well, I get you.
Police seized Ottawa Gold Buyers' records of all of Lawrence's other dealings with them. Between November of 2014 and March of 2015, records showed that on 18 different occasions, Leston Lawrence had sold a total of nearly 4 kilograms of gold.
Wow.
To the Ottawa Gold Buyers for $132,172.46.
Oh, that's a good chunk of change.
That is a pretty darn good chunk of change.
Yeah.
Leston had also sold gold coins and wafers to Ottawa Gold Buyers in the same period for another total of $13,563.87.
So he's getting close to 150 Gs.
Yep, pretty darn close.
Yeah.
Police obtained a search warrant for a safety deposit box that Leston Lawrence had at his home RBC branch in Nepean. There, they found 4 more gold pucks matching the other they'd seized from Ottawa Gold Buyers, all the same size. The pucks were tested and proved to be 99.5% pure, and having been subjected to the same chemical refinement process that took place at the Royal Canadian Mint.
Oh, interesting that they can narrow, they can...
Absolutely.
Ascertain that.
It's chemistry.
You mean voodoo.
This brought the total value of the pucks to $165,451.14.
That's, in converted to American, that's $32.
That's about 35 bucks.
Yeah.
No, it's probably like, what, 130 American?
Yeah, depending on the exchange rate, it'd be about, you know, 130. Could even be as high as 150, but
well,
not lately.
Right. The police seized a dip ladle from the Royal Canadian Mint, and it fit the 5 pucks perfectly. Much like the rifling in a bullet, the ridges on the pucks also matched the custom ladles.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Very right.
It's fascinating. Leston Lawrence had been in possession of almost 5 kilos of gold in total, a whopping sum for any private citizen.
Yeah, I would bet.
So 5 kilograms of gold is about like 12 pounds? That's a lot of gold.
It might not be gigantic in size, but that's a lot of gold.
Well, clearly it's, you know, over 150K.
Yes.
The Mint is known for its high security at both facilities in Ottawa and in Winnipeg. At the time, each facility had an armed security force responsible for access control, monitoring video surveillance inside and outside the facility, inspections of employees and outgoing garbage for gold via walkthrough metal detectors and hand wands, escorts to the more secure parts of the facility, and monitoring shipments in and out of the Royal Canadian Mint, or RCM for short.
Yeah, I would envision them to have this kind of security in there.
For sure. If Leston Lawrence was smuggling gold out of the mint, why hadn't it been detected before now?
Maybe he's innocent, Mike.
Maybe he is.
Maybe this is all just a coincidence.
It absolutely could be. Leston Lawrence started working at the Royal Canadian Mint at 320 Sussex Drive in Ottawa in 2008. The Mint building, declared a National Heritage Site in 1979, looks like a castle surrounded by a 10-foot-high spike-topped black wrought iron fence. Essentially, this is Canada's answer to the fabled Fort Knox in Kentucky.
Yeah, what a mysterious place.
Yeah. The first coins were stamped out at the Mint in 1908.
Oh, wow.
3 years later, they began refining gold as well and are world-renowned today for their efficiency and accuracy in their processes.
It would actually be a pretty neat place to work.
I think so, too. You might have to have some designations or something, though.
Like Mister?
Like math.
Yeah.
At least grade 10.
Fuck. I could, like...
You could fake it.
I could fake it.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. When they ask me to do a basic equation, I'll, like, fake a heart attack or something.
Sure. The Mint has won many awards for design and beauty of their collector coins, and they minted the medals for the 2010 Olympics here in Vancouver.
Which, wow, what a great time that was.
And they were pretty-looking medals, too.
I agree.
The Mint buys the gold they refine from three different sources. The first source is semi-refined ore from gold mines, which is usually about 40 and 60% gold.
Okay.
The second source of gold for the Mint is companies selling industrial gold scrap, like leftover gold from jewelry manufacturing and manufacturers of medical machinery, like MRIs and stuff like that. As well, remnants of gold sheets from coins that have been punched out.
Okay.
Finally, and most ironically, the third source is old jewelry and gold bullion coins, small bars and wafers from small businesses like Ottawa Gold Buyers, who buy from private citizens like Leston Lawrence.
So interesting, they were buying gold from the Royal Canadian Mint to then sell back to the Royal Canadian Mint. Interesting.
Well, we don't know that for sure. Maybe his parents have a gold mine in Jamaica. We'll go through the investigation.
Sure.
When Lawrence worked at the Mint as an operator and refiner, the process for gold refinement was roughly as follows. It's not super scientific.
Get gold, refine gold.
Essentially.
There we go.
I left out a lot of the very confusing different chemicals and things that they use because I thought, would I want to listen to a podcast about that? No.
Oh, I'm sure there's like seven people who would love it.
Seven.
Yeah.
Worldwide.
And yes. They currently work, they are refiners.
At a mint.
Yeah.
The gold comes into the mint and is weighed against the manifest from the seller. So does it weigh the same as they say it does? Yes. If the weights match up within an ounce, the gold was put into unsecured buckets on the floor of the refinery. The gold from the buckets was then dumped into a furnace, and once melted, a small amount is dipped out with a ladle and cooled for purity testing, determining what is owed to the gold seller.
Okay.
And this only has to be a very, very small amount.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they put that gold back into the furnace again.
I would imagine so.
After that, the refinement process continues. More melting, more refining. Once the refiner feels the gold has reached a purity of 99.5%, another ladle dip is done. And this is called a large dip.
Of course. The good old large dip.
And these are the ladles that matched the pucks. This time, the sample commonly referred to as a puck is between 5 and 6, sometimes 7 ounces of near pure gold.
Okay.
The puck is tested in an XRF machine to ensure 99.5% purity, which, if not yet achieved, refinement continues.
That's how I test all my pucks, only with XRF machines.
Well, an XRF machine, Scott, is called X-ray fluorescence technology.
You don't have to tell me.
It's a non-destructive way to test the purity of metals and elements from simple sodium all the way to uranium.
Well, that's exactly why I only use that machine, Mike. It's non-destructive.
I'm so glad.
Yeah, it's this with current technologies, why use destructive?
Yeah.
I mean, jeez.
I gotcha.
Okay, I'm just, like, I'm passionate about it.
I can detect your passion about this particular subject.
I don't goof around with XRF.
These pucks are not marked, as they're meant to go directly back into the furnace in the same batch and remelted. Once the purity of 99.5% is reached, the molten gold is poured into forms, creating 110 to 120 ounce anodes, and they are taken on to the next stage that brings the gold purity up to 99.99% purity.
It's a lot of percents.
It is a lot of percents, like ivory soap.
Yeah, I don't get the reference.
Remember that commercial? It was 99.9% pure or something.
The soap was gold? Cool. I think the wash
was gold. Great, that worked out well. Often, two people would be on the refinery floor during the process, but sometimes Leston Lawrence was left alone. When he worked as a refiner, part of his job was to test the pucks. And the pucks are these little chunks of gold shaped like, surprise, hockey pucks. It is Canada, after all. And it's about 1 inch across and 3/4 inch high.
Well, that's much smaller than I was picturing.
Very tiny. Yeah, they're, okay. They're well, probably about just a little smaller than a golf ball.
But I guess it's their purity that really makes them quite valuable.
That's correct. But yeah, like, think of that. Just about the size.
It was like a thicker.
Almost a golf ball.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, like, a much thicker loony.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Initial testing of the gold from the cellars is not 100% accurate, and the recipe was 8,000 ounces of 70% pure gold would make approximately 5,500 ounces of pure gold.
Hmm.
The pucks used for testing in the second part of the process would present 0.1% of this number,
okay,
which, due to inaccuracy of the first round of testing, might be expected to be lost during processing. So that's okay, why so the mint didn't know why it was going missing, because
yep, it's a tolerable variance.
Yes, exactly. Wow. Scott just did like math.
I'm not as dumb as I think I am.
You said that.
Did I? Maybe I am.
So this is why the gold was going missing.
Makes sense.
Due to the machinery and other structures in the refinery room, the security cameras did not cover every single angle in the room when Leston worked there, or anybody else for that matter. It was expected for him to momentarily disappear from camera at various points in his workflow.
Oh, okay.
Also, when removing a puck from the XRF machine and placing it back into the furnace, all anybody would have to do is turn their back to the camera to be unseen and slip a puck into the pocket of your work clothes.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
The RCM is divided into two sides. One, where the work of the precious metal refinement and coin creation happens, is considered the secure side.
Sure.
Kind of like a prison in a way. There are processes and measures in place to ensure that gold and other precious items stay on the secure side where they're supposed to be, unless checked and rechecked by security personnel.
Yeah, makes sense.
Processes for the employees leaving the secure side are meticulous and aim to maintain the highest level of security.
For sure, you're working in a mint.
Before leaving the secure side, mint employees must shower.
Oh, interesting.
A special drainage mechanism under the shower system catches any precious metal dust that may be on their skin.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's very precise.
Wow. It must be a very clean work environment.
One would hope.
Well, I mean, all the showering.
Yeah, you can't say, yeah, my coworker hasn't had a shower in a week. Nope. That would mean he hasn't left for home. They change into their street clothes, and their work clothing is put into special laundry hampers. They must change into other footwear that was not exposed to the refinery floor and metal dust.
I genuinely am curious as to what amount, what quantity of precious metals have they retrieved back via that method, via dust and whatnot. Like,
that's a great question that you should go on a tour to the mint and ask.
Well, I'm asking you because I thought you were the expert.
I'm not a, I say it at the beginning of the show, I'm not an expert in any of the topics we present.
Yeah, you do kind of say that.
I do.
I should stop trusting you.
Well, you never did trust me to begin with.
This is a good point.
This is a good point. The exit from the secure side is through a very sensitive metal detector archway that looks much like the ones you see at the airport before you fly when you go through security there.
Makes sense, yeah.
There's also an X-ray machine for your personal belongings, also like the airport. They just scan your wallet and your keys and stuff like that.
Yep.
Your shoes.
Yep.
Before
you them.
Yeah, before you your shoes.
Break the machine.
If someone stepped through the archway and set off the alarm, typically they would be scanned using the handheld metal detection wands. Yeah,
okay.
Just like the ones you see going into a rock concert now.
Yeah, makes sense. Totally.
If metal was detected with the wand and determined accidental, the employee was allowed to leave.
And by the way, I love that you specified a rock concert, Mike. That's showing your age.
A hippity-hop concert?
You could have just said a concert.
An EDM event?
Sure.
If you're going to see Deadmau5?
They're probably scanning you.
Dead Malphi.
Dead Malphi, yeah. Well, he drives well done, old man.
He drives a funky Nyan Cat Ferrari through Toronto.
I know.
Anyway, if no metal was detected by the wand, it was considered a false positive by overly sensitive machines, and the employee was allowed to leave.
Sure.
A detailed record was kept of how many times particular people would set off the metal detectors. Leston Lawrence, it turns out, had set off the metal detectors more than any employee without a metal implant of some kind.
Oh, I was okay, yeah.
Interesting.
Indeed.
According to court documents, he set off archway detectors, other than in a random fail, 28 times on 18 of the 41 days he worked on the secure side, between December 15th, 2014 and March 15th, 2015, the date he stopped working at the Mint.
That's a good chunk of time.
RCMP watched hours of video of Leston Lawrence walking through the metal detectors and failing. Not once did they see any accidental metal brought through. So he would go through, fail. He'd get wanded by the security guard. The security guard would say, go ahead. Nothing. Can't find anything.
Yep.
He would just walk off, go home.
Interesting.
On March 12th, 2015, RCMP issued a search warrant for Leston Lawrence's locker on the secure side of the Mint.
Okay, let's see what they find.
Wonder why. Among various expected personal items, police found two interesting things.
What would they be?
One was a pair of latex gloves.
Sure.
Okay. And the other was a jar of Vaseline.
Maybe, like, he needed them for medical reasons?
Well, he claimed the Vaseline was for burns.
I'm convinced.
And, well, he works around molten metal, right?
Exactly.
However, there was no instances at all ever of anybody using Vaseline on a burn at the Mint.
Whoa. Well, he's preparing the hypotheticals.
Just in case.
Exactly. Possible outcomes.
From this, the RCMP determined that Leston Lawrence had secreted at least 22 pucks of nearly pure gold out of the Royal Mint inside his rectum.
Wait a minute.
That's right.
Wait a minute.
Up his bum. All up in his business.
Well, if it's true, I mean, he kind of earned the gold.
Again, from court records, he clearly had the opportunity. The security cameras at the Mint would not have detected him putting a puck in his pocket after taking a sample from the cauldron. He often worked alone. But there were no cameras in the locker room in the secure area. His locker contained Vaseline and latex gloves, which could have been used to insert a puck into his rectum.
Mm-hmm.
A puck so inserted would not have been detected by the hand wands, which were used after the archway alarm was set off.
Well, this is good to know.
Yeah, because those wands will not detect metal inside the body.
I did not know this.
Well, now you do.
Now I do, see?
And so now does the Mint and the RCMP. And Leston Lawrence goes boo-hoo.
I bet.
It was believed that the other corns and...
Yeah. And corns.
It was believed that the other coins and wafers had also been stolen.
Corns and wafers.
Corns. I did say corns.
And wafers.
Leston Lawrence was fired from the Royal Canadian Mint on March 19th, 2015.
So this is a fresh
Well, pretty story. Pretty fresh.
Yeah, a couple of years.
On January 25th, 2017, Leston Lawrence was found guilty of having stolen nearly $190,000 worth of gold from the Royal Canadian Mint.
Ah, geez, that's a lot of ass pucks.
That's a lot of precious metal to shove through your leather Cheerio.
Jesus, right? Jeez.
The old turd cutter is getting a good workout.
Turd cutter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that technically, it does do that.
The Hershey Highway.
Yeah, let's keep it going.
I know. I told you this one was going to be immature.
Poop.
Probably lots of it. I wonder if he had the smell of victory about him.
Ayo. Well, we've learned a lot about the refining process, but I'd also love to learn a lot about the post-refining cleaning process.
Yeah. Well, it was probably just a tap. Yeah. Just a tap to wash it off.
But would he put like a strainer over the toilet and then poop on that.
Why don't they? Yeah, how did he get it out?
That's what I'm saying. Because
he's never admitted to this.
Really?
No.
Because he clearly, like, it's up there.
It's not like literally up there.
It's not teetering on the edge.
No, it's like up there.
Yes. So, I mean, you know.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe it was digital manipulation? Or, well, you know, he could have.
I'm pretty sure it would have been analog.
He could have squeezed tight.
Okay, I guess you're going to have to conduct some research, Mike.
Well, I did.
Oh.
Just so you know. No, I didn't do any. No, it was no actual. I didn't do testing.
Oh,
well, there was no physical testing.
So then you're guessing. Okay.
No, sure. No. I actually have spoken to individuals previously who you'll see as we go.
Previously? Oh, okay. All right.
Among other things, Leston had used his ill-gotten gains to purchase a boat in Florida and this house in Jamaica. He claimed it was for his parents, it was actually for himself. Hmm. The Crown wanted jail time and a $190,000 fine slapped onto Lawrence. And they wanted like 30 months worth of jail time.
Oh, wow.
From a CBC article on the case, Crown attorney David Friesen told court in Ottawa that Lawrence should be given a 3-year prison sentence, arguing that theft of gold and breach of trust are serious offenses, even though this was his first offense and he'd never been busted doing anything else.
Yeah, but I'm sure they want to set precedents.
They want to give him a good spanking.
Yeah.
He abused the trust placed in him as a refiner to benefit himself. Motivations for the offenses was greed, Friesen said. He added that the offenses took place over several months and were not simply a one-off. Mm. He also said that Leston had made no demonstration of remorse. Hmm. Leston's lawyer argued for 18 months and no fine, doing some victim blaming, stating that the Mint made it too easy for Leston to just walk out with the gold.
Oh, the Mint shouldn't have wore that dress.
Exactly.
Jesus Christ.
It was the heels that, you know.
Yeah. God, I hate victim blaming.
On February 2nd, the judge made his ruling as to the sentence for Leston Lawrence. The Crown got what it wanted. As well as the $190,000 fine, Leston Lawrence, a man with zero priors, was sentenced to 30 months in jail.
Heavy, but good.
From sentencing documents, considering all of the circumstances and taking into account the totality of sentences, I conclude that an appropriate term of incarceration for Mr. Lawrence is 2 years, 6 months, 30 months for each of the three offenses which he is being convicted to be served concurrently. A penitentiary sentence is required to express the denunciation required for a significant breach of trust of this sort. That message is sent with a 30-month sentence. Similarly, a 30-month sentence will serve as adequate general deterrence in the circumstances of this case.
Sure.
And the judge signed the document.
Yep.
The judge's name?
Oh, is this? Let me know.
P.K. Doody.
You gotta be shitting me.
I am not shitting you.
Doody?
Yes, Judge Doody.
Doody.
Judge Doody adjudicated the case of the man with the gold up his ass.
Are you making this whole thing up?
I am not making this up. You can see this all you like. I have links to the official court documents.
Your Honor Doody.
Justice Doody.
Justice Doody.
Yes.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how appropriate, though.
I wonder if he was assigned to the case just because. You know, it was like, maybe it wasn't his turn, but some of the higher-ups thought, I think Justice Doody should look at this case.
You know what? Like, that's something I would do.
And me too.
Yeah.
Which is why I suggested.
Yeah, and would be chuckling about it for years.
Absolutely. Hey, you know that case with the guy with the gold up his ass?
Doody.
I put Judge Doody on it.
You know why? You know why?
Why?
Because there was poop on the gold.
There were poo on the gold. It was poopy gold. Outside the courthouse, Leston Lawrence's lawyer spoke.
What do you think about the decision today?
You can see from this judge's sentencing decision and from his decision in the trial itself that he's very careful, very meticulous. There was a lot of detail in the decision today.
And how is your client doing?
I think he's dealt with that very well. We expected it all along. When we were doing the trial, when no one showed up for the first week and we were sort of under the radar, that was very, very surprising. So when it finally did happen, it wasn't a surprise to him.
Would you say it's a fair ruling, fair decision?
This judge, when you look at both his decision on the case and on the sentencing as well, it's difficult to quibble with anything he had to say. He didn't accept our argument on the trial, but that's what we pay him to do, is to make those decisions.
What's the plan to pay the money back? I mean, this is $190,000, $20,000 from the, that's how much cash there will be from the sale of the house once it closes. Mm-hmm. But what's the plan? Because there is a time limit, and if it doesn't get paid back, he has to go back in jail.
That's right. The clock doesn't start running on that until the end of his sentence, which doesn't mean when he gets out. It means the actual end of the 30 months. He then has 3 years in which to pay it. And if he doesn't, he's going to end up serving another 30 months. It's a pretty good incentive to do everything you can to pay it.
Working with the CATSA, the Canadian Air Transport Security Authority, the Royal Canadian Mint have since plugged the holes in their security with some upgrades.
I see what you did there.
Or have they? Earlier this year, April 2018, the Mint fired another employee suspected of having stolen $110,000 worth, 2 kilograms, of gold from their facility.
Wait a minute.
Unsure if this was another golden butt bandit at this point, they refused to comment further as police are still investigating and charges are pending. Yeah, so for years, here's my research.
Okay.
For years, people have been smuggling things inside their rectums.
True. We've all watched prison shows.
Right? Or Jackass, where the guy put the car, the toy car, up his bum and then went ahead.
Never seen Jackass.
It was good.
Yeah.
If you like that kind of thing.
I do, but I haven't seen it.
And typically, the places that people would be smuggling these things would be, in Scott's favorite place, the Clink. Or they'd be hiding suspected contraband while crossing borders.
Okay. Yeah, clearly.
Some ex-cons I had the privilege of conversing with.
Whoa.
Told me that here in Canada, at least, this method of secreting something up your back passage is called suitcasing or keistering. You can probably figure out why. For example, an exchange between two prisoners might go something like this. Scott's going to play prisoner two.
Oh, I get to act.
Get ready, everybody. I'm prisoner one. Hey, man, want to go smoke some of my weed in the yard today?
Where'd you get that?
I bought it off Fat Tony. He suitcased it when he came in last week for taking off the heads of parking meters.
No, thank you. I don't want any of your Fat Tony rusted balloon knot weed.
You're lost, man.
No.
Well, you see, that's how it'll go.
I'm putting that in my IMDb.
It's got to be. Yeah, Scott's an actor now.
Yeah.
As well as drugs and crossing borders and going into prisons, people have used their stink winker to smuggle all kinds of crazy things, including money, cell phones, and even a .38 caliber pistol.
Yeah, I just don't get it. Like, how the fuck? That's huge.
Correct.
I could not imagine having a .38 caliber weapon in my hiney.
Maybe it was a snub nose.
It doesn't. I don't care what kind of nose it had. It's too large for my rump. Like, seriously, how can any human put a cell phone in their ass?
You're asking the wrong guy.
If any of you out there listening have had a cell phone in your ass, please chime in.
Yeah, feel free to send us email or just come on to the Umberyard and talk to us about your experiences with keistering large objects.
Yeah, I mean, there's no judgment, but
we will laugh.
Well,
but with you, not at you.
Yeah, a weapon isn't really tapered. I'm thinking logistics, Mike.
Like hand grenade.
Please don't tell me somebody's had a hand grenade.
Yes.
I mean, we all know.
I did a lot of research for this episode, and I did see a lot of odd things.
I mean, we all know about Richard Gere and his gerbil, but I don't think he was smuggling it.
Right. No, I think that was more for pleasure.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not for the gerbil.
My God. Okay, well, I mean, I guess desperate times call for desperate measures.
Desperate measures. If you want a boat in Florida and a house in Jamaica, put some gold up your chocolate starfish.
You know, for the when you pose it like that, like a house in Jamaica and a boat. Just saying. That's a...
Have you ever had the urge to do anything like that, Scott?
To smuggle poop bucks?
Yeah, or, yeah, I don't know, to keister anything.
Well, there was that one time with...
I didn't think there was actually going to be a story.
Well,
you can go on. I'm not going to stop you.
I had to shift gears somehow.
That's not true. That can't be a real thing.
Of course, it's not true.
Oh, thank God. Because I've driven your car. I don't want to put your hand on that.
No.
Ugh.
I mean, I've inserted the gerbil for Richard Gere, but anyways, yeah. No.
You know Richard Gere?
Do I ever?
Inside and out, apparently.
He's the geariest.
This is a good one.
Once again, it depends on not good for the pucks.
Not good for the pucks.
No, not good for the pucks.
I think good for the listeners, though.
Well, if you can't get a chuckle out of poo pucks, you're broken.
Yeah.
You're broken.
You're busted good.
But seriously, though, like, that's... He made out with some good cash. That's a good chunk of change. I guess houses in Jamaica, though, are like far cheaper than
they are in
the lower mainland.
Yep.
Like $190,000 will get you a parking spot. And it's not even a joke.
No.
In Vancouver.
Well, before we go, we want to thank some of our patrons, our newest patrons. Thank you to Denise Sakaki.
Thank you, Denise.
She's from Duval, Washington.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I like Washington.
Yeah, same.
Thank you to Cassie, a.k.a. Catherine, who's also from Washington State, Lakewood.
Lost to Washington.
Tracy London.
Oh.
She is from Poco.
Hey, thanks, Tracy.
And for those of you not from the Lower Mainland, that is Port Coquitlam.
Yep, it's one of our neighbors.
Also home of Robert William Picton.
Hmm.
I don't think he'll ever be back there.
No, he resides in a different location now.
And another one is from Teresa Cochran. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Teresa.
And she's from McChesney Park in Illinois. I initially mispronounced it.
You did. It happens. Welcome, Teresa.
Yeah. Welcome to the Patreon. Anywho, that is it for this week. Stick around for the Après show. We have some interesting things to talk about.
As usual,
for our $5 plus patrons.
You got to check it out, though, guys. Seriously, you got to, like, we really have some fun in the after shows. It's pretty much just
it's banter. There's not as much, so don't missell it, because there's not as much research. So if you're thinking,
oh, no, not at all.
Like Generation Y and those guys do fantastically researched extra episodes as their Patreon
oh,
stuff.
Oh, no, this is all free.
We're just
free
form. Being goofballs.
Yeah, this is just us.
Riffing.
And so we really have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun doing them.
Well, Scott has a lot of fun.
Because it's pretty much me talking. So if you like me, then... Pay the $5. You'll get more of me.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah.
I should.
We're going to see a big drop
I think I'm actually going to cancel my subscription.
Yeah, I was just going to say, we're going to get a substantial decrease in Patreon subscribers now.
There you go. So don't forget to be a good egg and not a bad apple.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone.
Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.